Welcome to the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship podcast, everybody. I am Marshall Ferguson, and I am off to Grand Bend Motorplex coming up. The man on the other side of this Zoom, if you're watching us on YouTube, that is Colin Fraser. He is already in Grand Bend. Looks like it is beautiful there for now, Colin. I've seen varying levels and reports and everything else about what we are going to expect weather-wise. It's always a little bit touch and go when you're up along the Lake Huron shores there. What are you hearing and seeing that we're going to end up getting?
Well, anytime you're near a big lake, and these are great lakes, you touched on that. You've got hard to predict weather, and I've spent a lot of time following various sites trying to figure out what is and isn't possible. It was rainy last night. It was rainy this morning. The track is dry. They're practicing right now. I think we're going to have showers at a couple of points. The probability peaks at around 40%, which isn't terrible. But of course, the problem is when you get a little bit of rain, it pushes the schedule because of the time it takes to switch tires. And some of the classes haven't experienced a wet track and all the things that go with that. And of course, very stressful for the teams and riders to be prepared. So it's just another element in the middle of a stressful thing, a national event, that everybody's nervous and doesn't bring out the best in everyone.
I would also say that I'm not an expert at much, including English, an expert. But I would say that watching bands of rain come off of Lake Huron and make their way from that region, whether it be London, otherwise towards where I live in Hamilton, when they do come off, yeah, it might be 40%. And obviously the 40%, I don't know if people actually know this, 40% speaks to the percentage of the area that you are looking at that is supposed to get rain. But if there's a 40% chance of rain and you are off the edge of that end of Lake Huron at times, it can come through and it's like, yeah, you might have gotten hit by the 40%, but the rain that does come, it can come in a really, really powerful band, which again throws a lot of chaos into all of this. So we will be updating you throughout the weekend, letting you know what's going on, of course, bringing you coverage, social media, everything else at CSBK underscore official is where you can find on social throughout all of this. You are already there, as I say, they are out practicing. Just give people a quick sense of the rundown of the schedule today as we head into obviously more of the typical things on Friday with the practices, the qualifications in the afternoon, and then Saturday we've got practice and racing Saturday and Sunday.
So the what determines a lot of what happens at the track is the structure of timing. The riders always have to have their electronic triggering devices that they mount on the motorcycle, but we don't have active live timing on a Thursday. So they're split up basically by the most basic group. So the pros go out, then the amateurs go out, then the smaller bikes go out. So there's not a lot of differentiation, but that allows for more time. And of course, early in the season, particularly because we haven't had great weather this year. And even here at Grand Bend, they've had a couple of track days and a regional event, but the weather wasn't terrific for those. So everybody's kind of short on dry running. And this morning they bailed out of practice early because the track was wet, took an early lunch. And then when they got back out at noon, there were a couple of puddles, but the conditions were pretty good. The people seem happy with the track. We've already seen some reasonable times. And of course, the local guys, the people who compete in the SOAR series regionally, they are the ones who've been up to speed the quickest. And the person who normally is the benchmark for how fast we're going to get up to speed and has been successful here recently, he is technically in the sky somewhere, maybe Alaska-ish right now. So Ben Young is not a major factor in today's event. So we're not going to go over to Ben's team and ask what his onboard timer has told us, because his onboard timer has been pushed to tech and back and nothing much exciting was yielded in terms of times.
I was going to say Ben Young's tachometer, everything else right now is reading about, I think, 2,000 kilometers an hour airspeed, something like that, because he's trying to rush his way back. Again, for those that are not familiar, if you haven't seen on social media, what has Ben been up to? Because this is a pretty amazing storyline that will kind of weave throughout the entirety of round two at CSBK.
Well, first of all, we have to mention that this was all supposed to be top secret. No one was supposed to know anything about it. And I think the first person who glued the pieces together and started speaking publicly was Jordan Zoke, and that Shannonville. Jordan was talking about it. Jordan has been to Suzuka for the 8-hour endurance race. He was quite successful there about two decades ago, riding for Corona Suzuki, bikes built by Scott Miller at Fast Company from a shop not far from here. But anyway, where we're headed here is one of the biggest events of the season in international competition is the Suzuka 8-hour World Championship endurance race. And at one point, A lot of North Americans participated, including a few Canadians, people like Steve Cravier and Ruben McMurder and those sorts of people. But Ben Young is attempting to become the first Canadian to compete there. And now we're going to have to figure out who the last one was, but it may well have been Jordan Zoke. So that's a big honor. Bridgestone supports a factory-backed BMW team in Japan, as you can imagine. At the Japanese national superbike level, there aren't a lot of BMWs because there's a lot of other manufacturers who are, down the street rather than in Germany.
Yeah, absolutely. And how much do you think his performance in Daytona played directly into this opportunity?
I think it makes a difference because if you're top 10 in an international event and, Daytona had a pretty good selection of world level guys, including world endurance riders. And Ben was definitely paying attention to those guys. And now I wonder, was it how much he knew about the chance to go to Suzuka? Was he a little more focused on the French endurance guys who came over, but each rode their own motorcycle? When I say came over, I mean went to Daytona. But yeah, Ben wasn't far behind them, so his performance certainly put him in context. Now, Suzuka is a very different track and a very difficult track, but Ben's ridden at a lot of different racetracks. I don't think that's going to cause him any trouble. And there's lots of data. There's lots of research. There's lots of good videos. And obviously, we're all looking forward to hearing how it went. And from what I understand, he's pretty comfortable that he's going to get a ride out of that. So I hope that is what transpires. Obviously, Bridgestone would love to showcase their champion from the first year of spec tires from the Canadian Series last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So congratulations to Ben. I'm sure we'll be catching up with him. Where his body clock is going to be at and all the rest. I mean, it's not as though, as you say, he has to get up to speed or learn a new track. It's not as though we're going to, rad torque and he hasn't been out there and seen it and all the rest. It's like he knows Grand Bend. He is, of course, our champion and also extremely competitive in sport bike in round one, but not in sport bike round two here. And so that plays into kind of an opening of the field, which is where I want to begin with the actual CSPK on-track action. We've kind of been enamored, and I know it was honestly a lot of people wandering around in the hot pit in round one in Shannonville, kind of smiling at each other and a little bit of, some giggles here and there. This is a ridiculous group of people that are in this sport bike category. It was such fun racing for so many different reasons. But what was your, I guess, primary takeaway from round one in sport bike here leading into round two, aside from Ben Young? Because he was obviously, he goes out and wins race one, he crashes out in race number two, but there was a lot of other takeaways because it's such an interesting group of riders.
Well, I think to start with, how much slack was in Sebastian Tremblay's setup? What more could be gained? He built a new motorcycle, he had some new ideas, and obviously the context he didn't know when we saw him at the Shannonville Regional is that that bike was going to be raced against the top bike at Daytona, Ben Young Suzuki. So I think, Tremblay took a big swing and basically connected. He won one of the races. I think he probably was going to win that race, even if Ben hadn't fallen in his own coolant. But unfortunately, because of that issue with the engine and the Suzuki having no coolant, that bike needs to come apart and there just hasn't been the time to do it. So we're now back to what we were expecting this season to be, which is Tremblay versus everyone. And the person who, in my mind, has clearly stepped into that gap, who was part of the story, but not maybe last year where he expected to be, was Elliott Vieira on the Ducati. And then a little bit John Lang. And then the rookie pros are coming on faster than I expected, yes. Which is great. That's what we'd love to see. And a podium for one of those guys would be fantastic. And by the way, one of those guys who is JF Sear, Maverick Sear, his dad is JF Sear, is the dad of the dad. The grandfather was Bob Sear. So I know all of them from racing in our series. So I apologize for mixing them up. Sear tried a Ducati twin, which would be in the same class as the Triumph he rides in Econoloop sport bike. However, here today, I just went and looked at it. He was riding an ex-Jordan Zoke Kawasaki ZX-10R Ninja, so a full-blown superbike. And Steve Moxie, who supports a lot of our riders with Econoloop, he bought that bike from Jordan Zoke and apparently rode it a couple of times and just stuck it in the back of his warehouse. And he's dragged it out, and Sear has his number on it, and he's riding it right now.
Wow. And what do you think is the likelihood he actually runs that for the full course of the weekend?
I think the likelihood is good. I think it's a good opportunity. The bike seems to be in one piece, as in it's, more or less ready. Obviously, it's going to take some sorting and dialing in. It has the right suspension and things like that. Also worth noting, every once in a while, when guys are trying to win amateur championships, when they get to Mosport, if they're used to riding middleweight, they borrow a larger bike to help them get more points in amateur superbike when they're bumping up, as we call it, when you move up a displacement class. Last year, Maverick Sear at Mosport did ride a Kawasaki ZX-10R Ninja, qualified on it, looked good, and he had an electrical problem and couldn't race it. So he has a little bit of time on that bike. And I would say, you know, he's improved substantially since then. And certainly what we saw out of him at our opener was good. I think it's always a concern when you know one bike so well, as he knows the Triumph. And by the way, the Triumph, he raced with a stock engine because their new engine wasn't ready. The Triumph has the good engine. So theoretically, he has two very good motorcycles this weekend. And of course, that always, you're hoping that both of them are as good as they can be. And the Kawasaki is an unknown, but it should be there because the biggest concern is really getting the chassis. Here at Grand Bend, it's not really a high speed test of the machine. So getting a bike that handles is important. And I think he has enough support that he should be able to do that.
Wow, that is a twist that only CSBK could deliver just at the second round in here as we get set for racing coming up this weekend. But the other name that I have to throw at you here is we obviously been working on that GSXR 750. He's not going to be racing on it, but Trevor Daly is, and he's also going to be involved in Superbike. So he's doing the double, which is what Ben was doing back in round number one, to be able to have him jumping on with a bike that was pretty comparable, all things considered, at Daytona. I wonder whether or not he crashes the party. Because, yes, we are talking about some of the younger guys and, you know, Elliott Vieira and Maverick Sear and even John Lang being up in there in the mix. And I do wonder, Trevor comes in and basically says, you know what, for those that don't know, he's been working as a kind of high-end mechanic otherwise for the Sean Dale and Kelly team, riding a BMW in Moto America. So he's kind of been sprinkling in riding here and there and wherever he could get a chance. He did do some testing at Grand Bend not that long ago. Him throwing himself into the middle of the fray here for a round, I think is going to be amazing theater, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's a competitive guy. He has won a pro sport bike national back at Shubenacadie. I believe that was on a Honda. It was a few years ago now. And, you know, Trevor Daly is a very, very competitive rider. He's aggressive. He presents well. A year ago here, he was kind of the star of the show. He crashed in Superbike in the rain and got back up and charged through the pack. You know, he's going to be gunning for Tremblay and Vieira because, you know, they are the targets. And also he knows how Ben rode on a similar motorcycle. So he's going to set his sights at that level at the minimum. And, you know, Daly can be a wild card. We'll see what happens. You know, the Grand Bend guys, the locals always have a lot more say here than every year we seem to discount them. Lately, we've been a little more inclusive that, you know, last year it was Pletch and Superbike particularly that stood out. So we'll see what happens with those guys. And of course, normally we'd be talking about David McKay as the guy to watch for in pro sport bike at Grand Bend, says the guy drinking out of his Honda mug. But David McKay,
sorry,
is not a Kawasaki.
I just had to take a vigorous swig from my HRC mug, but go ahead.
Yeah, Kawasaki, David McKay and Kawasaki are no longer a dominant player in pro sport bike. They won that title last year. Now he is the leader of the Honda Canada effort. That, in my opinion, they had a terrific start at Shannonville. I don't think realistically they could have done much better. He had a good run here at the regional a couple of weeks ago, so we'll see what happens. But there's going to be a lot of interest in him, but also older Honda mounted Chris Pletch, whose dad was a star of the series 40 years ago, James Pletch. You know, he was in an incident with Daly in the dry on Saturday and then had a very good race on Sunday in the wet last year. So Pletch is going to be looking at a podium. He thinks that's a realistic goal. We'll have to see what his pace is against this crop of motorcycles. And then, you know, we have other people coming back from the problems they suffered at Shannonville. And of course, the huge unknown is Trevor Dion, who at times is the guy to beat here, has been on pole here on a BMW superbike, is currently a Ducati rider, had a pretty crazy weekend at Shannonville, attracted a lot of attention, had a great storyline. But, you know, normally we would think this is a race where he would maybe break through. This would be the big chance. I don't know that he's in a position in terms of equipment or in his physical condition to do that. I know he's frustrated by the whole thing, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him, so I can't tell you where he's at, but he has been dealing with some arm pump issues, and that's really tough for racers to deal with because it just it's very distracting. And obviously, if you can't feel your right arm, it does all the detail work. It does the throttle. It does the brake. And if that's giving you trouble, it just it affects everything and really gets to your confidence.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. You know, you mentioned that David McKay probably couldn't have done any better realistically. It was interesting to me, and I think I said this on our kind of recap of round one, that he ends up coming out of that fifth in the pro superbike, you know, standings as after round one. And he was still super frustrated by the idea that Dion did get past him, right? Because he's like, he was on that bike. He'd never ridden that bike. And it's like, man, Dion's a really damn good racer. Like, he understands how to get speed out of pretty much everything. So for him to be frustrated coming out of that, I looked at that for David McKay in that Honda program on the Fireblade as being less about him, you know, being really disappointed this wasn't a successful weekend, and more that he set the expectations so high for himself immediately out of the blocks, making that jump as a sport bike champion into superbike, that it told me a lot about his mentality and what they're attempting to do with Honda there. But I do want to ask you about a little bit more about Dion, because I know that you haven't had a chance to speak to him since you've actually been at the track here setting this round up, but you have kind of understood what his full experience was in round one. What do we expect him to be on this weekend? Like, where do we think he's, are we going to pull something out of the truck that we haven't even seen yet, or what's going on?
Well, from what I understand, they have the Ducati that he raced at Shannonville in the fall, the bike he rode on Saturday at Shannonville 3 weeks ago, the bike he crashed Sunday morning. It's completely back together. I saw him riding that bike just after lunchtime. I do not think they're planning to ride the 1100, the actual street version of that bike, which was the goal, was to race that bike this year. Right now, that's not happening. They've got another bike that's come up from the States. I don't even know if they've tried to take that through tech yet. I don't know if they've had any time to go over it. And one of the big problems they've been having is access to the tuning, to maps and plugins and all the things that are so crucial now in terms of how you set up the bike. So right now, the bike he crashed at lunchtime at Shannonville 3 weeks ago seems to be running well. It looks fine. It's completely fixed up. So I think right now that's the focus. And I would assume his concern is how is he doing with his arm issues. So, you know, obviously today will be important for that. And I didn't ask if the BMW is here. I would assume it is. I mean, it was a fourth place bike 3 weeks ago. It didn't get any slower. And there are other BMWs in the series who've had some success. So I think it's, you know, it's a fallback. Yeah. BMW M, not a bad idea. You and I were at GP Bikes looking at a selection of BMW superbikes that they had in stock, including the kind of a street bike version of the M with the with the number plate and the big wings and all that stuff. So, yeah, those BMWs are certainly around. And, you know, last time we raced, three of the top four in the series, in the final results, were those BMWs.
I love the idea of, you know, Trevor Dion's going through this. He's back on the Ducati and he's, you know, comfortable and all the rest, but he's just got a BMW lurking in the shadows in case anybody was wondering about what could potentially happen should anything go sideways throughout the weekend. I actually asked you this when we were voicing one of the episodes recently, but for those that are not familiar, and even those that have heard the term because maybe they're MotoGP fans, World Superbike, all the rest, but can you explain arm pump to people? Because we don't do a whole lot of amateur doctor stuff on this podcast because it's reckless and irresponsible, but you do understand what this term is, because people in the motorcycle racing community tend to throw this one around as, yeah, he's got arm pump, or yeah, he just came back from arm pump surgery. And I don't feel like a lot of people actually understand what that means that they're dealing with as they're riding.
So it became an issue, I would say, in the early 80s. The guy who was famous for suffering from it was an American who was quite successful, Randy Mamola, factory rider in Grand Prix. And at the time, the thought was that he had become almost too muscular. And what happens is if you get overdeveloped, the opportunities for the veins that run in your arm, they don't have the blood flow because you've packed them with muscle, and obviously strengthening your wrists because you're basically holding yourself up. And, you know, a lot of people don't think about this, but when you're racing a motorcycle, most of your steering is done with this hand because it's the clutch hand, right? It doesn't have much extra work. This hand has all the detail work, the throttle opening and the brake, right? Which is all very finesse stuff.
Right.
So if you start having any lack of feeling or discomfort or confusion about what's going on there, and I have never really had the problem. A couple of times I've had a leather suit or a pair of gloves or a couple of things that gave me a little bit of that I could fix just by adjusting my equipment. And that's a common thing. I've heard of people having arm pump because they're wearing, those very tight shirts that are breathable that kind of support your musculature if it's a little too tight. But anyway, to cut to the chase here, the idea is that in here you get overdeveloped and then you cut off the blood flow to your hand. And of course, if you're nervous about this or concerned or upset or focused on it, it tends to have a psychological element to it as well. So what they do is they will go and they will make a small incision and basically just relieve the sheath around that group of blood components where the blood's working. And a lot of the times that makes a huge difference. And at the very top level, people sometimes have that done in race 8 or 9 days later. So if there's 1 weekend off, they'll have carpal tunnel surgery on the Monday and be on the track a week Friday kind of thing. Now, having said that, no one's sure what you have. And some people have had multiple surgeries and it's come back quickly. Sometimes it's other things that just present as the concept of arm pump where you feel like your hand's going numb, that you don't have enough control to operate the bike. And with Dion, there's definitely some concern that he had a fairly big crash in the fall at Daytona at the CCS races and hurt his shoulder. And that could easily be the issue that's causing the problem. So he's been to a couple of therapists. I suggested he get acupuncture. I haven't asked him if that happened. We definitely will do our best to try and check in and see how he's dealing with that. And also, I don't think he's thrilled that we're having a podcast going through all of this stuff because that is a little bit blood in the water for the other racers. So that's not great. But my message here is this is a very common thing, particularly at the highest level. But if he feels like, for instance, that incident that happened Sunday morning at Shannonville may have been because he couldn't feel his hands as well as he'd like to, obviously that's hugely scary because you know you're operating a motorcycle at very, very high speed and all of your movements are so delicate and precise, and you have to have confidence in your muscle instincts so that if you're riding closely with somebody else, you're not thinking about your arm. Now, having said that, we were just talking about his battle with David McKay when he switched to the BMW on Sunday, and they were definitely very close together, and he fought his way through and made a nice pass and, marched forward, not at quite the pace he would have liked to, but given he was now on the BMW, a bike that had no setup and he was not used to, I think that's the more impressive of the two results. The distant fourth Saturday on the Ducati, obviously that's not what he wanted after how last fall went. The BMW ride was actually quite interesting.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, it's terrifying, the idea of trying to do what these guys have to do if you can't feel your hand properly. And I'm somebody who sympathizes. It's just a personal thing because my wrist has been messed up for a long time. If I go to throw a football, which is something I used to try and do fairly successfully, that if I can't get the right feel, the right touch on throwing a football, it feels terrible. Like, my wrist will just blow up, and it's this terrible feeling that makes you feel like you can't actually be yourself. To do that on a piece of machinery, not just standing there trying to play catch with your kid, that's a whole different ball of wax. But to be able to, as you say, on Sunday, still be able to battle through and do it on different machinery, to me, that, again, kind of tells me the mettle of what Dion is going to be doing this weekend. And let's also remember when we did that recap podcast call, he was standing there getting the Hard Charger Award from Fast Riding School and basically said, for anybody who thinks I can't ride a superbike, I think I just proved it, and I'm really looking forward to being on the box here coming up in Grand Bend. Well, here we are.
Oh, he was MacArthur. He was definitely doing the "I'll be back," right?
Yeah.
Like, don't count me. I mean, I think he said, if people think I can't ride a superbike, which I don't know, are there people who think he can't ride a superbike? I think we've covered that one fairly well. It's such a common issue in motorcycle racing, and I don't know anywhere else. I occasionally hear about other athletes with this problem, but it's just to do with how you ride the motorcycle. It's so unusual. And if you go and Google it and start reading about all the Grand Prix racers who've been through it and what their treatments are and what the surgery was and how many times they've done this and that and how they've worked through it. And here's the solution that works for me. There's definitely no through line. And as I said, the suspicion is that his issue is not actually carpal tunnel. It's a different form of arm pump. And, famous Canadian racer, two-time Canadian European champion Michael Taylor had very serious arm damage, had a nerve excavated and replaced in his arm,
Wow.
which is, I believe at the time, was about a 20% likelihood of success, and came back and raced that way. And obviously, you know, you don't want to have obtrusive surgery if you can avoid it, but it's amazing what people have done, and people have had success afterwards. So hopefully this is an issue that can be dealt with without anything obtrusive.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the sake of the, you know, GP Bikes Pro Superbike feature class, we would love to see him be able to compete as his full self, as we would with everybody. I guess we'll round this out by talking about, you mentioned it earlier, you know, the BMWs, they've had some success at various times. We've talked a little bit about Ben. I'm sure we'll catch up with Ben at some point throughout the weekend out there once his body clock returns back to Canadian.
Well, can I tell you a quick story?
Yes.
So 30 years ago, Steve Crevier was a factory Kawasaki rider. He rode the Suzuki 8 hours on a semi-privateer Honda RC30. I think he had a pretty decent result. And then he had to rush back for a race at Shubenacadie, so he had further to travel. And unfortunately, at the time, a guy named Don Monroe was the fast guy at Shubenacadie and was very much making his reputation. And Crevier, you know, turned up, got to the track just in time to start practicing, and was just so frustrated that Don Monroe was on top of him nonstop and literally asked Don to leave him alone, that he was exhausted from racing the 8 hour, that he hadn't recovered, that he couldn't sleep, and blah, blah, blah. And in the end, I think Steve did beat Don that weekend. But, you know, it's not a 4 hour flight, right? It's a
yeah.
pretty major undertaking. And he almost certainly got on the plane exhausted, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that might be good. Maybe asleep, right?
But this is the other thing, is that I'm somebody who, if I'm, you know, covering a Hamilton Tiger Cats game when I used to do radio for them in BC, it takes me a week for my body to feel normal coming from Vancouver back. And I'm only there for like 36 hours. And I always stay on Eastern time when I travel. You can't stay on Eastern time when you're going to Japan. That's just not possible. You have a life to live while you're over there. So it'll be a huge challenge for him. But the guy that it feels like, you know, we never really get to in these things, which is crazy because of A, how talented he is, and B, how well he performed in round one. Samuel Garin. We have to talk about him before we get out of here on this preview. What do you expect from Sam? What were your thoughts and perceptions of him coming out of round number one?
Well, I think Garin had a breakthrough on Saturday. That was his, in my opinion, you know, he's had podiums, but that second place was his best, most consistent effort. I know his team were very happy with him. Sunday, unfortunately, was kind of what we were scared of with this era, without Dumas on the Suzuki to challenge Ben, what is he capable of, how far he can get ahead. I believe Cam Bickle did the research, and I think that was the third largest margin of victory, 20-ish seconds. That's, you know, that's big, and it could have been more. Now, Sam obviously slowed down. He was safe for second. Jordan had already slowed down for third, but all the interesting racing, and there was some interesting racing, was behind, right? It's so, I mean, we're always a little scared what the top guy at any given time can do if everything goes right and he gets his head down. And I also think partly what happened there is Ben had just ridden the sport bike. He was very frustrated that he had fallen. It wasn't his fault. I mean, he was happy that that wasn't the issue. But nonetheless, if anything's going to focus you, I mean, you know, Ben Young is our top gun. He's used to winning. He was trying to have a perfect weekend. I think he hasn't said this way, that he was trying to win every race in both the top pro classes. Now, that's not going to happen, and he's not riding the 750 Suzuki and sport bike this weekend. I hope he does come back and ride it, hopefully at CTMP. But what we had was a glimpse of what the reality is when Ben gets everything going the way he wants to. The BMW is very strong. Garin's bike is basically the same. It may have some advantages in terms of setup. It may have some disadvantages, but they're minor. And he has enough support now. That has sometimes been a problem, that he hasn't had enough people who know what they're doing looking after him. So I think that's important. I don't think this is his best track. I don't think it's a problem, though. And this place is a little bit stop and go, a little point and shoot. But if he's in the right frame of mind, I don't think that's a problem. I think he could run with Ben here. But I think the question is, who else is in the mix? Because if Ben is a little tired and a little bit careful, then that brings all the Grand Ben guys into play. And Sam will for sure not be happy in sixth place behind three or four local heroes.
Yep.
And I mean, really, this is, you know, I'm now departing from prediction and just going straight to fantasy, right? What would be the best case scenario? Well, you know, it's a big toss up and no one's sure what they're doing. And you know, when we've had races with three or four unpredictable variables here. They've been really, really exciting, including the first time we came here when Ben had a pretty big crash right at the end of the race that brought out the red flag, and a guy from Saskatchewan named Bodie 80 won the race, which is one of the most memorable races in the history of the series.
Amazing. Yeah, it's I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of chaos gets thrown in by those local guys, because Sam is going to be up against it with them. But yeah, the variable of Ben coming back from his awesome experience in Japan, having Trevor Daly being in the mix, having David McKay firing things up, having Trevor Dion going through what he's going through, it should be a fantastic week. The last thing I got to ask you here, Marquez and Bagnaia, same team. Here we go. Fire it up. Right? How did you experience that news?
Not surprised. I'm interested to see how some of the details play out. I'm very interested to see that allegedly Martin, just as one might expect, made a hugely emotional, instantaneous decision. Now, it may be a fairly lucrative, emotional, instantaneous decision. So that's not always a bad thing. And, you know, him changing teams and doing what he did and the way he went, because I think some of us thought maybe KTM, Gas, something along those lines. I think it's going to be interesting. And I think, you know, when you have the two best guys on the same team, that's, you know, comparing yourself to your teammate is the most important thing. But man, you can see partway through the year, there's going to be some team politics there. Cause you know, right now Marquez has not won a race in, I think it's 900 and something days, and there will be a breakthrough that's going to happen sooner rather than later. But, you know, Bagnaia has really been the guy of the recent era. And particularly once we've settled in with the spec ECU and the spec tires and the new aero and all that stuff, some people think he's a little dull. I think he's just a smart guy who's figured out how to make this work, and his recent efforts have been impressive. And it is super competitive at the front there. But I also still think Marquez, just in terms of pure entertainment, is unrivaled. Now, maybe Acosta, he is really fun to watch. And I mean, you know, I have no dog in the fight, and I don't generally cheer for overdogs, but I always enjoy watching Mark Marquez. And partly that's because I've been lucky enough to go to COTA a few times, and he is just invincible and so spectacular to watch at COTA.
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite quote in the lead up to all of this stuff happening in MotoGP was, we ended up getting a quote essentially from Pekka where he said, yeah, I don't care who comes in the team. I just want someone who's not going to upset the rhythm that we've created and we've built within this culture. And it's like, I wonder who he was talking about. There's basically one guy that's going to come in and put a flamethrower to everything. And even the videos that came out on social media of Marquez, basically, because Ducati just basically came out with like a picture of him, was like, hey, yeah, he's our rider moving forward into next year. And Mark put out all these like flashy highlight reels and things, and then just a shot of him sitting there and like winking at the camera and pretending to pull the throttle and stuff. And I'm like, he is going to just make that so much fun. But the very emotional and snap decision you talk about with Jorge Martin going to Aprilia, I heard a clip from Aprilia's boss who basically said, this came together in the last 24 hours before we announced it, which was, and he said, to your point of rubbing the fingers together, he had to call essentially his boss and be like, hey, we actually have a chance at this. And he said, yeah, go get him. And that whole go get him is just, yeah, the budget's wide open. Do whatever you have to do because we need to stay relevant.
Well, and you understand why Ducati are saying that, you know, we're trying to control pricing to some degree because they have 8 bikes and there's a lot of competition to get on those bikes, and a move to Aprilia may not be the smartest one. We'll see. But the difference is, because Ducati have so many bikes, they can try and balance the guys off against each other. However, having said that, it's hard to imagine that Marc Marquez was in any way a bargain purchase, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is he's Marc Marquez, right? I am often cynical about racing, and I, as much as Marc Marquez has had a really rough time lately, I am not cynical about Marc Marquez.
Yeah, absolutely. MotoGP on hiatus for the next couple of weeks. We are the story. It is the Bridgestone Canadian Superbike Championship. It is Grand Bend this weekend. We're looking forward to seeing everybody out at the track, be there all weekend long, bringing you podcasts, of course. Cam Bickle writing all the recaps and the stories and everything on CSPK.ca. Follow along on social media at CSPK_official. Colin, go get yourself a wonderful meal along the shores of Lake Huron, and I will catch up with you in the morning at the track, okay?
Talk to you soon. Thank you.